I'm Emily.
And I'm Tycho.
And we're friends, right?
Sure, I guess.
As much as two strangers on the internet can be friends. And like most friends, we try to influence each other's tastes.
And like most friends, sometimes that influence is for something good we legitimately love, and sometimes it's for something horrific and terrible.
And that's what you're about to hear. This is Lone Holdout.
Hey, Brinky. This is Emily, and I'm the Lone Holdout, and I am joined by my two celebrity crushes. We have Tycho Alhambra,
the, Hello.
the hopeless semantic, and we also have Frankie Frayne, the three-inch bubble of love. Hi, Frankie.
The farter of microphones.
And before I had crushes on these two guys, before there was Tycho and Frankie, there was Scott McClure, and that is who we're talking about today. He is the director and the star of The Joker Blogs, which is...
Is this in some other context other than The Joker Blogs?
No.
Okay, so you're your very own Harley Quinn?
I am to Scott McClure as Harley Quinn is to The Joker. I guess. Yeah, sure. So The Joker Blogs is a series on YouTube, starring Scott McClure, as I mentioned. It is about a Heath Ledger-style Joker who is in Arkham Asylum, and it's a found footage-style series about his adventures.
To an extent.
And I had these guys watch the first series. There is a bunch of between-series videos as well as a second series, but... we just watched the first. And Frankie, I don't know if you remember in our first episode where I said, I don't know anyone who's a Batman aficionado.
Right.
And you took offense because you are a Batman aficionado.
Yeah, I guess. I would probably consider myself that. Although I'm not I'm sure there are people out there that are really steeped in it. But yeah, I mean, I think I own every Batman movie to have ever come out. And I'm a big, big fan.
And Tycho, you're also a Batman fan. And so when I found out that...
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
...that
yeah.
neither of you guys had seen The Joker Blogs, I really wanted to recommend it to both of you. It was something I really enjoyed. So you guys watched the first season, and let's talk about it. What do you think?
Should we, take turns? How should we dive into this?
I do want to hear from Tycho first, because last week... I was so confident that my recommendation for him was going to go over with a bang. I was so sure that he was going to love it. So when I find something that I think he's going to love, I'm often disappointed. So I want to hear what he has to say.
I liked it. I watched the whole first season in one go, and it didn't feel arduous or like I was like, oh my God, when is this going to end? It was good. I found the acting to be tolerable. So there are a lot of YouTube. I'm not going to say a fair amount of YouTube series. I watch maybe three or four. There's three or four YouTube series I'm going to watch, a couple of which I am going to recommend to you for later episodes. Mm-hmm. This one had some decent acting. The Scott McClure, he's the guy who plays the Joker?
Yes. He also plays Dr. Tommy something or other. He was in the wedding scene.
Dr. Elliot?
Dr. Elliot, yeah.
Yeah, I got that from his eyes.
Right. So when you say you watched it all in one go, there are 19 videos... But they range in length.
Yeah,
there's more than that.
There are 19, I guess, episodes, and then a few holiday specific ones. Some short ones.
I loaded up the playlist and then just said play all and just let it go.
Me too. And they ranged from about 20 seconds. The longest one was about 20 minutes. Usually rounding out at about 5 or 6 minutes.
I'll go ahead and tell you right now that wedding one, which was the longest one, mm-hmm. the shotgun wedding episode. I skipped over half of it. I was like, I don't care about any of this.
Okay.
All of the people that are like, good luck, good wishes. I'm like, don't care, skip.
Well, skipping over the beginning half, I think, might have been okay. I mean, Batman shows up at the end of that one.
Yeah, I mean, no, I skipped forward until the Joker, like until like the actual ceremony. I was like, I don't know who any of these people are. We haven't met them before.
Well, except for Poison Ivy, who was there.
I don't care about. Oh, was that Poison Ivy? The okay,
red-haired girl with the green dress.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't. Okay, I didn't catch that.
I think they do call her by name at one point, but you probably would have been able.
I did notice several. References to other comic characters.
Yes.
But I didn't. I totally missed the Poison Ivy one.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange being an obvious one.
Right. I did like seeing the Scarecrow also.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like Batman, Emily?
I'm not a Batman aficionado.
Well, you don't have to be, but I mean, he's one of the most popular characters. Like,
right. I can follow enough things. I'm not into the really deep cuts. I have seen all the Batman movies that have come out, but I don't listen to a podcast called Batman on Batman, and I don't play the Arkham, is it Arkham Asylum, the video game that you play?
Yeah, there's like three Arkham games. Yeah, they're great. Do you, have you seen any of the DC animated movies or anything like that?
I don't think so, no. Yeah. So I can catch the most broad references that they're making. And of course, I know who all the major people are and what's coming for Harleen Quinzel, who is his doctor at the asylum. So
I watched the Batman animated series when I was younger.
Yeah, which
and
is
they,
great.
And the first movie, The Mask of the Phantasm, came out. And I wanted to see that so bad, and I never got to see it. And I'm afraid if I went back and watched it now, I'd be like, "Oh, this is just stupid."
No. I'd be surprised if you didn't like it. It's really good, Master of Phantasm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll check it out.
It's like they, you know, really kind of big screen animation, and there's a great they do sort of the origin of the Joker in Mask of the Phantasm, a reimagining of it anyway. There's one of my favorite Joker moments, because I probably love the Joker as much as I love Batman, but one of my favorite Joker moments of all time is in Mask of the Phantasm, where Joker's in a fight with the Phantasm, and he's like kind of up against a wall, and he's feeling around for a weapon that he can grab at, and he has a choice between a giant piece of bread and like a hammer, and he goes for the bread and just smacks her with a piece of bread. I was like, that's so Joker.
Now, isn't kind of a recurring theme with the Joker is that he makes up different origin stories for himself just because?
That was Dark Knight. Chris Nolan's Dark Knight invented. There have been a number of Joker mm-hmm. origins. I would say that probably the big sort of Joker story that has like an official canon to it would be Alan Moore's The Killing Joke,
mm-hmm.
which is Alan Moore wrote The Watchmen. A lot of people know Watchmen. So Killing Joke is like one of like, you know, if there's like five Batman comics to read of all time, that would be one of them. It's essentially, it's a really great story where Batman's kind of leveling with the Joker at the beginning of it, where he's like, motherfucker, are we going to do this for the rest of our lives? Are we just like, I'm going to lock you up. You're going to break out. You're going to get out. I'm going to lock you up again. Like, how many times are we going to do this? And he realizes he's talking to a double. He's not even talking to the Joker. And the Joker is he's gone out. Spoilers if anybody hasn't read this. And he's kidnapped. He cripples Barbara Gordon. So Commissioner Gordon's daughter. Breaks her legs, and they hint that he raped her. And then he sends Commissioner Gordon on like this like horrible roller coaster where he has to look at all the photos of his daughter getting raped by the Joker.
Oh God.
Yeah. And it's kind of, he gets to the point where he pushes Batman to basically kill him. They hint at the end that like they tell each other a joke, and the two of them are just cracking up laughing in the rain. And there's kind of a little hint that Batman kills him. But in that, they do flashbacks of he was like, the Joker was a failed comedian who was like propositioned by the mob as like a patsy. And they kind of set up the idea that that Joker, the man who becomes the Joker, really just had one bad day. And that one bad day is the difference between a sane, happy, normal life and the monster that he is now. And in very, it's obviously paralleled to Bruce Wayne's story, right? If he had one bad day, and from that mm-hmm. point on, he's just this ghost of his old self. And so they're nicely mirrored in that way, and that's why all their stories are so good.
And doesn't that show up in the Joker blogs also?
Yeah,
I
caught that when he said, you know, the difference between you and me is one bad day, and I thought to myself, that's a reference to something. I haven't read The Killing Joke. I keep meaning to, and I haven't gotten around to it yet. I for the longest time, thought The Killing Joke was the series of comics where the Joker kills Robin.
No, that's Death in the Family.
Okay. And so when I looked up Killing Joke 2, because I was going to order it and get it because I wanted to read that story.
It's really short.
I read it over and I was like, oh, that's not the one I was looking for. Never mind.
Yeah.
But I know The Killing Joke is, and a lot of people, their idea of the Joker comes from the Batman series from the 60s with Adam West, played by Cesar Romero. And he's just kind of this, who, by the way, couldn't care enough about the role to shave off his mustache.
Well, wouldn't you say that?
So whenever you watch it, he's still got that mustache on under the paint. But the Joker in that one is decidedly less insane and psychopathic.
Wouldn't you say that?
I don't know. My classic Joker is Jack Nicholson. That's the Joker I grew up with. So
see now even that Joker is kind of based off of Cesar Romero. But you get into The Killing Joke and some of the other Batman, the recent Batman stories. I mean, the Joker is messed up.
Yeah.
Like, he is a completely, like, I think Christopher Nolan in Dark Knight nailed him, his character the best, and Heath Ledger was amazing.
Well, what do you think of Scott McClure based on Heath Ledger's performance? Because I was reading a review of the Joker blogs, and they were talking about the difference between Heath Ledger and Scott McClure. And we're saying,
well,
that Scott
you can't.
McClure,
okay, you know what? Yeah, there's going to be differences because they're two different people.
So what I was saying is, they were praising Scott McClure for bringing in some more of the humor that Heath Ledger was leaving out. They accused Heath Ledger of being a little too serious, and this being less so. So, did you take that away as well?
I thought he did a more or less good job. From doing the role, the very first one, where he first walks in and sits down at the table, and he's got the lean over, looking, and he's looking up because his head is bent down and he's looking up at whatever, and he's doing the blink and the lick and everything, and I thought he's doing it really well. And then, like, as the series progressed, he kind of lost some of that and stared, like, a little more evenly at the camera, and there were moments where it came out, like when he was talking to Penny, was that her name, Penny? And
I don't think there's
the nurse.
Penny. Oh,
the nurse.
Pearl? Are you talking about the lady that had to drive the car?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's telling her the story of how he got the scars. I was like, okay, he's getting back into it. But there were several moments where he kind of lost. He didn't totally lose the thread of the Joker, but like he was less creepy, and he was less just overall he was less Jokery. And
so you said he did a pretty good job. I think as far as the acting in this thing goes, because it's indie, it's amateur, right? I think Scott McClure did the best job.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
Is it amateur?
Yeah.
Are these just now? Because that was a question I had. Was, are these just guys who decided, hey, let's make this series of videos, or is this like an actual production company that?
Well, they have a production company in the sense that a small group can. It's called Great Scott DeVery Best, as in Scott McClure and Andrew DeVery, which is his partner, who also helped write this.
I mean, right. if they're financed in any serious way, then I would say they're. They're bad at spending money.
I don't think the first one was financed. They did do a Kickstarter for the second series, and I did give to that.
So all of the scenes where they're driving around and there are just police cars everywhere, they were just driving by and happened to see a bunch of police cars, so they filmed it, or what?
Based on the, I was wondering the same thing. Based on the cuts, it looked to me like there was rarely was there anything kind of planned looking. It was often just like police cars on the side of the road in an individual shot.
Yeah, they weren't involved with them. And
but it was cut clever enough that, you know, yeah. it felt like maybe some things were happening in Gotham.
Yeah, because it was kind of like, okay, so are they driving, like, is he just driving around in the Joker makeup looking for police cars on the side of the road?
Well, maybe they have a police scanner.
You'll notice he often wasn't in the same shot as the police cars.
I guess that's true.
But sometimes he was. Like, there was a helicopter that flew over them, and they kind of just played the moment. You could tell.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. See, and that was the other thing I was wondering, like was the helicopter just good fortune, or was that, like, or do these guys actually have you know, money to do stuff like that?
A lot of it felt to me kind of extemporaneous, and I think that sometimes really lent to it, like in moments like that where they make their production sort of invisible, and it really feels like you're in Gotham, it feels like things are happening. And then there were times where I thought that's like giving that same amount of air to everything. Like, there were definitely times where I was like, guys, cut it the fuck down. Like, why are we, like, we're watching people walk around, and I know it's found footage, but you can always do the little, like, we turn the camera off, we turn the camera on thing. I thought there was...
Well, and there are also, they use... supposedly what they're using is film, like tapes. And you can kind of see where they make the cuts, where there's... where the film jumps a little bit. I don't know, like just a film error. Because, yeah. Like, if you're... I'm thinking of the My Bloody Valentine or My Funny Valentine. I don't remember the name of that episode, but there was one episode where he's eating lunch. Oh, it was an apple a day. Sorry. He's eating lunch and talking to Harlene. And there's kind of a jitter in the film. And you can tell it's a cut because the food on his tray changes. So all of a sudden.
Or the main cut that I noticed was when he makes the fork disappear.
Well, that one they kind of had to do, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can understand that, you know.
Yeah.
What, you can't teach yourself a magic trick to make the fork disappear? Come on. No, that was, okay. But,
So, yeah, there were places where they had to put in cuts, even though it was found footage. But
no, and there are some of the YouTube series that I watch, you can always tell when there's going to be a cut because there's, like, this rapid camera movement. And everything's blurry, and then it comes back up, and it's like, whoa, what? Okay, and you just kind of know there's a cut hidden in there somewhere, even if you can't really see it.
And they probably did their fair share of those as well. Now, one thing I did want to talk about was the acting, though. I think Scott McClure did a fine job. I think their poor spot was their Dr. Quinzel.
Can I take this one?
Yes, please. Because this was something, when you first started watching, Frankie, you were texting me and saying, oh my God, you like these?
No, I didn't. I did not say that. You read into that because you're nervous. But I said...
not so much. You said this isn't very interesting, and the acting isn't very...
pull up the text. Let's see what the text says.
No, we text so very much, it is quite buried. But yeah, you said it's not very...
I said I'm having a tough time watching it like a movie.
Uh-huh.
Like back to back. And I'm also, the acting is a little rough. But
right.
So starting with the Joker himself, the problem here is that, so he does a good impression, but mm-hmm. acting is not impersonating, right? So, like, if Alec Baldwin, you can't be like an Alec Baldwin character in your own movie. So that's why I think that over, like, the first few episodes, I was like, oh Christ, I'm watching like a good impersonation of Heath Ledger. But the fact that it's an impersonation, all you're doing is focusing on all of the little mannerisms that he captured from that performance. And you're
right.
not getting a true, you know, emotional performance out of the guy. You're just watching him do a cool impersonation. And there's no story in that. But then as time went on, and he did adopt a little more humor, and he did relax into his version of it. I thought that it got much better.
Right, but, and I think that's what Tycho was saying, too, because at the beginning you had kind of the mannerisms. You had the licking and the mouth noises and stuff. That went away quite a bit.
He's also
towards the end.
He's a little small, too, actually, which is a little distracting. But other than that, the hair is pretty perfect. The makeup was applied really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
He's got similar eyes. So, yeah, that was cool. And I like the... I think the whole idea is pretty cool. I just think that they're like some better filmmaking could have been at play here. But as far as the acting goes, I thought that like Dr. Arkham had moments, and other than that, it was pretty much crap across the board. Like, I thought that it had that problem that a lot of amateur movies have, where it feels like you have like kids playing adults.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Arkham was obviously way too young.
Yeah.
Right. And that like, they're casting from their peer group, and so you end up with a bunch of people in their mid to late 20s, even though that's not the layout you would have as the entire staff at an asylum.
You've got a very distracting like indiscreet foreign accent from Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't know at first, in the first couple scenes, that he had one. And then by the wedding, I'm like, oh, what is he? Is he doing? Yeah. So.
But they were pretty
was rough. That now? Hold on. Was that an accent that was voiced by the guy who was playing Doctor Strange, or was it dubbed over? Because it sounded really dubbed.
No, it wasn't dubbed. He's like very much on camera talking. In the early episode, his back is to us, but later on, it's the camera's right in his face.
Right. Was the priest's Irish accent real or not?
Once again, it's like the only reason you're going to give like an accent like that to a character like it was obviously fake. But
it was
way over the top.
Just checking.
Well, the only reason
was over the top.
The only reason you would have that kind of voice is if you were like you know a 60-year-old Irish priest, and we the guy's like he's like 13, balding at 13.
Right. But I think their definite worst actress was Harleen Quinzel character.
I didn't think she was the worst.
At least in the beginning, she was pretty rough.
Yeah, she was like, so tell me about your mental illness.
Why are you talking to my patient?
Yeah, it's disappointing. Yeah. It's disappointing because it's one of those female comic book characters that a lot of people love.
Right. And that hasn't really been represented on the big screen yet, has she? I mean,
no. She was... Do you know where she came from? Do you know where that character came from?
I don't. And now, you guys had mentioned the animated show that was out, like, when we were kids. And I saw episodes of that. Not all of them, but I remember seeing her. And she the only representation of her I've ever seen.
She was invented in that animated series.
Oh, okay.
And she then became part of the canon. So then she started being adopted by the... So she's one of the few characters that came out of the animated series and, like stayed in Gotham forever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I took issue with it just in terms of like Batman lore, not that I have any problem with adaptation or changing things up a bit, but the Joker had a thing for her in this, and
in this series that we watched
in the Joker blogs.
Okay,
and that is not normally how it goes. Normally, the Joker is David Bowie. The Joker is the clown prince of crime. He's the pop star of Gotham. He's like a rock star of crime, and he has groupies. He has people that kind of he has clingers on, and she's like his biggest groupie. And he does nothing but break her heart and ignore her. And she just needs to keep ramping up her psychosis to impress him. And I think part of her like her appeal is there's a lot of sexism at play. Like she's very like. Submissive and servitude and so I thought it was weird that I mean it's a kind of a fun idea to flip that on its head a little bit and have him become obsessed with her but that was definitely a departure.
But he was obsessed with her, but also he saw it as her being obsessed with him.
Right.
I found his speech right after the wedding to be very interesting, where he was saying that she had her wedding anyway. Obviously, she wanted him to come.
Yeah, you know what? That's something that I didn't shine to Dark Knight as much as I like. I actually kind of like the Tim Burton ones. Not everybody loves those, but I like a lot of moments in those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that the Joker was kind of like unexplainedly crazy, whereas in the Dark Knight he spends a lot of time chatting with everybody about how crazy he is and diagnosing himself. And I find that kind of like not becoming of a crazy person. I think he should kind of, but you know, he does in the comics and stuff. He has a lot of little tidbits, which I would love to recite as we go on.
Recite one right now.
We talked about the Killing Joke.
Yes.
There is a wonderful line. He says to Commissioner Gordon while he's on the, he's on that roller coaster looking at all of his, you know, his daughter being raped and, and like crippled. He's talking about, how like because this was something I thought of while I was watching the Joker blogs. It seems to me in the first few episodes of this, which again I think we can agree are the weakest, while they were kind of trying to figure things out.
Yeah,
the Joker seemed to like the way he was performing it. The Joker seemed to me to be a little bit like disturbed, like unhappy with himself, and kind of like uncomfortable. And I always knew the Joker is nothing but comfortable. The Joker is on some kind of horrible ecstasy all the time. And or at least that's how it should be. And he says that this is like a little hint into like how he there is some pain under all the laughter, which he tells Gordon. He's like, madness is the emergency exit, which I love the theme park metaphor.
So you said Commissioner Gordon. Now in this, there, and it's episode 18, I think it's right before the end. What they're doing is showing some news footage, yeah, talking about him shooting up the wedding, and they're playing clips and showing still images from the Christopher Nolan Batman movie.
It's definitely the worst episode in the whole thing.
Right, but how are you feeling about it? I don't think that's very fair to.
I
don't know.
It obviously makes it's kind of like the impersonation of Heath Ledger itself. It's like it makes you too aware of the other, yeah, of the, because it's such a different style. One of them is one of the most expensive movies of all time, and one of them
that's true.
And yeah, one of them is this really grungy little cool project. So I don't know. I think they should have stayed away from. But then again, I think they should have reinvented the Joker even more. You know, I think they should have kind of made their own thing happen there.
And they kind of did as the episodes went on, but then
yeah,
you get to that episode 18, and then they're right back into, hey, this is Heath Ledger's Joker. Did you notice?
It's just such an iconic performance from Heath Ledger that it would have been a smart idea to try to like kind of invent their own Joker.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, you put Scott McClure in this makeup, and he's looking enough like the Joker, that's probably... might have been where it started.
Yeah,
for them.
That could have been the catalyst, sure.
Right. So, Tycho, would you watch the second series?
I will tell you that I was going along with it, and everything that was happening with it, I was following it. I thought the Joker was a little less insane than he should have been. Like I think. When Heath Ledger did it, you have this air of you don't really know what's going to happen next. He could just kill somebody just for the hell of it, or not.
Or I could kiss him on the lips.
And then when we get to, and then when we're watching this series, like he was not, like he didn't have that. He was missing that. There wasn't the sense of, you know, I'm gonna kill you. Anywhere in there, and
you didn't get that sense when he blew up the guy's wife. You know, like he had promised, he made the guy a deal that he would release his wife and let her go from the bomb he had strapped to her. And
he also killed that guy and killed that guy and put the bow on him, and there was all that blood, and he killed the security officer, and there was a lot of murdering.
Yeah, but like I mean, when they went on the road trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the wedding and all that. I was like it wasn't as it didn't feel as dangerous as the Heath Ledger Joker.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
He seemed to be kind of nice to these people and stringing them along a little bit.
But I'm going along with it, and I'm okay with it, and we're going along. And then we got up to that very last scene where they're like, "Oh, Lex Luthor bought Arkham Asylum," and I was like, "Nope. Nope, you just nope." Why did you do that? Like,
no,
I know that's Lex Luthor's thing, that he does a whole bunch of real estate scams and everything, and that's how he made all his money, and that's pretty much what he does. But, like, no. Does that figure into the second series?
Probably, but nope, what specifically? Like, the crossover between that and...
Like, I was fine with them. I was fine with them talking about, you know, oh, my fiance is going to get a job at LexCorp in Metropolis or wherever it was going to move to Metropolis. He's going to get a job with us. And I was totally fine with that. Like, go ahead and, you know, do that. And then, like, Lex Luthor came there and was like, and by the way, was that really Kevin Spacey? That wasn't really Kevin Spacey, was
that
it?
That probably was not Kevin Spacey. He didn't show up in the credits. The last 4 minutes of
it actually
that
did. In
was...
the credits, it said Lex Luthor, Kevin Spacey.
I may have taken some audio.
Ah.
All right. And then, you know, they were like, oh yeah, Mr. Luthor. And I was like, no, don't do that. Like,
you just don't like crossovers?
No, I'm fine with crossovers. I just didn't feel right. It just felt like this, like, I guess we're popular enough. We can do a second series. So we need some sort of crazy twist to end this. Lex Luthor buys Arkham Asylum.
Is there
like,
someone
nope.
else from the Batman universe that would have been a better choice? I mean,
no, yeah, if some, no,
not
yeah,
Bruce
if,
Wayne, because that wouldn't have worked out, I don't think, so.
Yeah, if it had been someone else from Batman, fine. You know, freaking Bane. If freaking Bane had bought Arkham Asylum, all right, I can go with that, because Bane's part of, well, probably not Bane.
What if there's like a, what if there's like a super cheesy thing where like there's like a green question mark in his fucking cell?
Now that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like if they had said, "Oh, we have this new new guy bought it since, you know, Jeremiah Arkham isn't doing it anymore. This new guy bought it. He sent you this little message and you open it up and it's just a green question mark." I would have been like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah.
Like that would have been great. I would have loved that. But they're like, "Lex Luthor? Like Lex Luthor? Really? No, don't do that."
The Lex didn't feel right to you, yeah.
No, I mean, it was strictly the he's not part of Batman. Like, and I'm sure that there are moments where Lex Luthor has interacted with Batman, but like,
I'll tell you the only thing I could appreciate from that is there's this sort of like there's like a theme in a lot of Batman stories where people hire the Joker, and I always love that because it never fucking works out. Like the Joker,
what did they hire him to do?
Yeah, well, he's a dangerous guy. He's very cerebral.
Do they want it as a hitman or?
Yeah, it tends to be like you know, we absolutely can't kill the bat, or we you know, in the case there was a really nice animated DC movie called Under the Red Hood, which was about the second Robin, who everyone thought died, became his own vigilante, except unlike Batman, he kills, and he was killing all of Black Mask's guys and, you know, foiling all of his plans, and they hired the Joker. They're like, I know what we'll do. We'll hire the Joker. Like, it's no problem. There's also a really nice, there was the Batman animated series made a movie called Batman Superman, and it was like a 4-part miniseries that they turned into a movie. And I remember there was a really cool scene where Lex and Joker are arguing about the merits of their respective hero, where Lex Luthor's like, Joker, I'm sorry, but you've never dealt with the likes of Superman. And Joker's like, fuck you, Batman is way harder to beat. And they're both just kind of defending their own stable. But yeah, I like the idea of anybody propositioning Joker as though he's like a worthy ally, because he never is. He has no allegiance to anyone but himself.
Right. So, Frankie, one complaint that you brought to me was that you said it just didn't have enough Batman in it. Maybe I'm interpreting again, because apparently I can't read your text.
Right.
Worth a shit. But,
oh, my God.
Did you feel like this had enough Batman in it? Because what we've got is, I think, one reference to Bruce Wayne kind of early on, and then later in that 20-minute he shoots up the wedding video, Batman shows up.
It didn't have enough Batman. It did not have enough Batman in it. But let me explain that comment. I don't mean that I want to see Batman any more than I did. I think that for the project being what it was, they showed just enough of Batman. But what I mean is that Batman is not incidental in Joker's life, especially if this is really taking place directly after the events of Dark Knight, which it's supposed to. The Joker's life has transformed because of Batman. The Joker lives because of Batman. He says it in Dark Knight. He's like, I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? You complete me. He's not carrying on with his day, diagnosing himself, obsessed with Harley Quinn. Now he's thinking about Batman. And there are a few takes on it where, so Dark Knight Returns, I don't know if you've heard of that book, but that is like the Batman book. Like, that's the one, like, probably the most popular Batman book of all time. It was by Frank Miller. It was written in the 80s. And it tells a non-canon story of Bruce Wayne at age 50. He's retired from being Batman for 10 years because Robin died. And he comes back in kind of like it's like new age 80s. The crime is much worse. And he comes back as a 50-year-old and kicks a whole lot of ass. But when he does that, the Joker has been catatonic in a nursing home for the amount of time that Batman's been out of commission, meaning the Joker doesn't exist without Batman. He just sits there being fed in a straitjacket. He doesn't talk. He doesn't move. No one's heard from him in years. They're like, he used to be the most dangerous guy that ever lived. And when Batman comes back, when he sees him on the TV, the smile curls again, and he kind of comes out of the woodwork. So he's like, and in that one, they even made him kind of like sexually androgynous. He's kind of like almost a little bit in love with Batman.
How often does something like that show up? Because in this one, he offers to go upstairs and take him to the wedding. You know, he says we belong together. There's even a little thing upstairs. We should go and make it official.
Yeah. Yeah. There should be plenty of that. I mean, there should be plenty of that.
But how much is there in these things?
Well, I would have at least liked for him to talk about Batman and Harley a bit more.
OK.
He didn't even mention him. It's like if you jumped into this, you'd be like, this is the adventures of Scott McClure.
Right. He mentions Bruce Wayne once, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
Which, quite the same.
Which he doesn't even know that Bruce Wayne is Batman, nor would he ever want
right.
it. But the Joker could find out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. He just doesn't want to know.
Uh-huh. So it acknowledges the existence of Batman in this universe. It's just not about that. Tycho, what about you? Did you feel like there was enough Batman or not enough?
For a series that calls itself The Joker Blogs is about the Joker, I felt there was a good enough amount of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think they were actually even going to bring Batman into it at all. And when they did, I was a little under impressed with it. Like the first glimpse you get of it is him running,
and
like the lights all go out, and then he's
ridiculous.
Running through the. Yeah, and I was just like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, it's not a good looking run.
It would have been kind of.
But then for the most part, you just get little glimpses of him here and there, and then you just see like the best shot you get of him is when he's holding the Joker against the wall. And then it's just the camera's like right up and you only just see kind of like the side of his face.
Yeah.
And the guy who plays Batman does a really good voice. you know, so it wasn't like they were trying to present, the big muscly Batman. It was, you just see that little glimpse of wiry little skinny Batman running, and then you don't really see him again for the rest of the.
So you're kind of happy they didn't show more Batman just because the look
yeah,
wasn't right.
Just because you're not going to find somebody in your pool of friends who's going to have the right look.
Right,
for
and I think that's kind of what Frankie was saying about the actor playing the Joker is that he just wasn't necessarily physically right for it, and it got a little distracting at times.
I don't think they had to show Batman at all. I think that I thought one of the coolest parts of the whole series was when the lights went out. And Joker started getting really revved up because he's like, oh, come on. The whole thing could have happened without even seeing Batman, and it would have worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is kind of Batman and the Joker are two sides of the same coin. So I don't think you can tell a story about one without telling a story about the other to some extent.
Yeah, but and like Frankie said, he should have talked more about Batman because Batman is such an integral part of the Joker's life that he should have been made
more of a presence on the series,
a thematic
in the dialogue,
a thematic presence. Emily, can I recite one of my Joker dialogue lines, please?
Okay.
This is from Arkham Origins, which was a game that came out recently, a really cool Batman game. And they do a retelling of the Joker's origin, but when we meet Joker, he's just kind of like a shitty criminal. And then Batman saves him from dying, even though he killed like a ton of people right in front of Batman. And it captures the Joker's imagination. And in that moment, he falls in love with him. And you get to like actually play as the Joker, just kind of like frolicking through fields of henchmen, killing them with reckless abandon. and it's playing like romantic, like classical music. As it's not Mark Hamill who does the Joker's voice, who's like obviously like he's like the staple Joker voice, but it's a guy doing an impersonation of him. But the line, and I won't even try to do the impersonation, but the line is, and he's talking about Batman. He's talking to Harley Quinn, actually. It's the first time we meet Harley Quinn too. He says, and then you meet someone who changes your life and you feel you don't even know who you are anymore. Isn't it funny how one little encounter can cleave off little pieces of your past, deform your memories and persona until you rethink your whole identity? And as soon as you realize how foolish it all is, your laughter reverberates off the walls of your own emptiness. I just love that.
And Tycho, this is kind of something you and I have talked about before, because doesn't that sound exactly like the themes of the Jonathan Coulton song, Nemesis? It's the idea of being in love with your enemy.
Yeah, it's and like I said in that episode, that's the way Coulton introduces that song. He says this is a song about finding that one person that you can't live without, that you need, it's the person who finally completes you, and just needing to utterly destroy them.
Right, and so a question to both of you guys, since we've talked about there not being enough Batman to complete the Joker, does this series, you guys being big Batman fans, does this series show enough of an understanding of the character of the Joker and the Gotham City universe, the universe of Batman? Does it show that they're ignorant of it, or does it show that they understand it pretty well?
No, I think they get it. And I really wanted to accuse them of not getting it for like the first few episodes. And then as time went on, I saw things like he's talking about wearing the Mona Lisa as a mask, which I think is like, I remember that one of my favorite lines from Batman 89 was he has Vicky Vale captive and she goes, "What do you want?" And he thinks about it for about 2 seconds and he goes, "My face on the $1 bill." he has no idea what he wants. And I thought that was great. I thought Kill the Chef apron was great. I really liked some of the – I thought some of the stuff was clever, like the Joker 911 call. I love are you a glass half full guy or a glass half empty? I'm the guy who knocks the glass over. I think they got it.
So they had moments. It's just kind of a big glaring error that you're seeing, that they're telling too much Joker – and not enough.
This feels like pre-Batman Joker to me.
Oh,
this feels okay. This feels like any time I've known Joker before he knows Batman. That's what this feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Tycho? How did you feel about the universe that they're creating? Is it enough Batman universe?
No, I thought they did a good job with it. I think that they are people who are legitimate fans of Batman, and they get the Joker, and they get, you know, specifically the Christopher Nolan Joker. I think they did a good job with it.
I also thought that the whole device of like the videos you're watching on YouTube, the Joker really posted.
Uh-huh.
You know, this isn't like a production that we put on for you. These are really just videos that got uploaded to YouTube, and there really is a Gotham City out there. I thought that was kind of a cute thing. Although they broke their own illusion at times by like using musical score in found footage.
That was
another complaint that I had about it was the use of music and the use of the title cards that they did, you know, where he'd be like painting in a blood like substance the title of the episode, and then he'd say it, and I'd be like, that's not,
it's breaking the fourth wall.
You're not okay. Yeah, and then I thought to myself, the musical score I can get past, because if someone else is uploading it, then someone else can easily edit it. Because someone else is getting the file, you know, so they can...
Yeah.
They can upload it, they can edit it, they can add music to it.
I sort of like
if
the,
they want.
I sort of like the hint that it was a dirty cop doing it. But it, at the same time, I was like, what cop would ever work with the Joker? I mean, working with the mob makes sense, but... Or even working with the Penguin or Two-Face, like, those are... That makes sense, but who the fuck would ever work with the Joker? It's like for free, and for fun.
Now, one of the YouTube comments, and of course, anybody commenting on anything on the internet is crazy, but one of the YouTube comments I read felt like it was being implied that Dr. Quinzel was leaking it to the internet.
Oh, that's kind of a cute idea.
Did you get that at all?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, fuck that, then.
It's a fun idea, but no way. I mean, I really think, I don't think she's on board with him until time goes on a bit.
So how are we feeling about found footage as a genre as a whole? Like, clearly I think it worked for this.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about that style of filmmaking?
Well, I think it's really cool that they, like, you take this really lush Hollywood style, like the comic book movie is as produced as you can possibly get. And so I think to do a low budget, you know, found footage thing is really great.
So the found footage kind of gives them the permission they need to be low budget, right? Like it kind of,
yeah. And also, I also think that it adequately distinguishes them from the movie that they're basing their plot off of.
Right.
Yeah. Except for like when you have real problems when like Scarecrow shows up and he's like very much not the guy.
I don't even think he needed to take his mask off. I think it could have just been a guy with a sack on his head.
That's
he
super,
comes in with his lunch tray and then it leaves.
That super dopey mask that he shows up in. it's like okay, the Scarecrow is the least scary villain of all time now.
So, Frankie, have you ever had problems filling your set with the number of extras you need to make the scene work?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, because I noticed this a little. Oh, I noticed this a little bit at the wedding scene.
A little bit?
A little bit.
A little bit?
There, and you could be like...
Where there's three people at the wedding?
You could be like, oh, it's a real small ceremony. Because she does say that earlier. He says, am I invited? She said it's going to be a real small ceremony. The problem I had with it is that a character who was very vocal about, hey, it's getting late, I need to leave, is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got nothing. There are definitely
like that. No, that scene came up, and that was one of the scenes where I said, "Okay, so is this a big production? Are these people with money, or are these people with just friends? Because they had all those cop cars earlier, and they had the helicopter, and I don't know about that. And now we've got this wedding scene, and there's the priest, and there's the bride and the groom, and then there's the best man and a maid of honor." And then there's like maybe 10 other people in a church that has at least like 10 rows of like 10 seats. And I'm like,
yeah, I don't know. Why didn't they just get a smaller? Why didn't they just get a smaller location?
Right. And then it looks like they did it on purpose.
Yeah. You can also, I mean, when you're not doing found footage, you can shoot things with a shallower depth of field and kind of hide some of that stuff. But you know what? That was not the worst part of the production. The worst part of the production...
Oh, I'm excited. Yes, tell me.
...was the very cheesy homeless guy who... he was supposedly a homeless guy whose life was ruined by Batman when he was chasing the Joker in the Dark Knight because he, like, knocked into his car or something. I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention. But he follows the Joker around for the next, like, two episodes on, you know, when he's, like, driving through Gotham. And which, by the way, I didn't expect. I thought we were going to spend the whole series... sitting with the Joker across the table. And so
you didn't like that either. That's part of what was bothering you was that it just wasn't very interesting.
Well, cause yeah, he's like, now you see craziness is this. And he's talking for like 7 minutes at a time. It's like empty dialogue. This is kind of Joker-ish. And I'm like, all right, do something, would you please? And they did. Mm-hmm. So they lived up to my expectations. But yeah, that fucking homeless guy was like not the worst actor, the worst writing, super lame. Like if you want the Joker to be scary, like having that guy tag along, just like, it's like having Jar Jar Binks in the car.
there were a lot of jokes with the homeless guy that didn't work.
Yeah. Because he's had every career, supposedly, he says.
Yeah,
that was a joke. Priest.
I got that. That was a joke. And then like, you know, oh, I used to do that. I used to be this. I used to be that. And I'm like, no, you're okay.
And now you're homeless. But
I will give him credit for the one genuinely funny moment that I kind of laughed at. They first encounter him, and the Joker's got the knife or the gun up against his head or something. First of all, does the Joker ever use a gun? Like, the Joker seems more like a knife guy. I don't think he'd ever use a gun.
He talks about that in Dark Knight. He says he prefers to kill with a knife. But you see him a few times in Dark Knight walking around with, like, a big Uzi.
Okay, so he's got the gun up against the guy's head, and he asks him, "What do you want to die?" And the guy's like, well, "Yeah,
kind of."
And then the Joker just kind of looks at the camera, and he's like, "Really? Are we doing this? Is this happening? You know, like, because the whole point was, I'm going to show you how expendable you actually are. I can get anybody off the street to do that. Here's this homeless guy. Hey, homeless guy, you can help me or you can die. Which do you want?" And he's kind of like, well, I kind of want to die. And the Joker's like, really? Like, you just totally, I'm trying to make a point here. Why are you, and it was just that, and it was all in that one little look. And I was like, okay, that was, I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. So Frankie,
I guess that was more of the Joker than the homeless guy, really.
Yeah. But.
So, Frankie, we know that Tycho does not want to watch the second series.
I don't want to watch it if they're going to do the whole Lex Luthor thing.
Which I think they do, but Frankie, right. What about you?
I love Batman stuff, and I liked this at times, but it looks like the second series has already been released.
Yeah,
and I don't see myself watching it the way I watched this last one. I mean, I think that if I was all caught up and then they released them every week, I would probably check them out because it's a little less of an investment. I get a little less kind of bogged down by some of their. So yeah, hopefully, I mean, I watch them in 19 episodes improve. I mean, maybe they become better filmmakers over time. But some of their filmmaking is just like tediously crappy to me.
Right.
So I don't know. I doubt it. But But that's not to say that I don't think this is a really cool project and that I'm very supportive of these guys.
They're also better funded in the second series. Now, I know you've said, probably even on this podcast before, that you don't need money to make a good film.
I do wonder what they would need money to make this for.
Right. Are you going to be more mad at them if they do the same things that they did in this series, just with more money? Like, if they make all the same mistakes, but they've got bigger production value, is that going to be a big disappointment?
You need a lot of money before you can pay people to act better. If the same cast is coming back, it doesn't matter how much money they have. That, right. Like, the main problem is going to continue to be there. I also think that, like, again, I think that one of the coolest parts of this was that it was a kind of a lo-fi thing for such a normally high-budget idea. So I think that that's, you know, if the only thing that sometimes money will give you, like a little bit of Kickstarter money, is a little bit of freedom to shoot, maybe some permits. Like, I was worried for them while they were, like, driving around with, like, a car and people screaming help in alleyways and stuff. Like, I was worried that they were, like, cops were going to come over and be like, what the fuck are you doing? And maybe that happened, for all I know.
Hmm. So, can either of you guys make some recommendations for other Batman things that maybe aren't just the big budget movies that maybe other people would enjoy more than the Joker blogs?
Sure. Tycho, do you want to go first?
As far as Batman goes, I personally enjoy the Nightfall, Night Quest, Night's End, that entire stretch of the book.
Is it a comic book or?
Yeah. It's the first appearance of Bane in the comics,
mm-hmm.
or the first appearance of Bane, full stop. And it's kind of Dark Knight Rises, but done a hell of a lot better, and less talky and less stupid, with more Batman. You can get the trade paperbacks of each one. They're fairly inexpensive to get, and I think it's a really good story, and it covers, you know, the whole Bruce Wayne gets his butt kicked by Bane, and they bring in a substitute Batman who kind of goes a little crazy with power and redesigns the whole suit and becomes a lot darker and a lot more violent. And so when Batman recuperates, he has to come back and reclaim the mantle of the Bat.
Hmm.
And there's a big showdown at the end, and it's kind of awesome.
And also I think it's the first time that there is a different Batman.
Yeah, they bring in, like, there's a completely different man behind the mask.
Right.
So it's a non Bruce Wayne Batman.
Yeah, his name is Jean-Paul Valley, and he's a character in the Batman universe named Azrael, who was kind of brainwashed to be like an assassin or something when he was younger, and so he's got all of this fighting experience, and he takes on the role of Batman, but as he progresses in it, he becomes more violent and more dark, and Robin is just like, dude, you can't be doing this. And he's like, well, I'm the Batman now. I'm going to do it my way. And it becomes like this whole thing. So there is also that whole series was condensed into a novel. It was novelized, and I think it was written by the guy who was the editor of the book at the time. And I know I had that book. I don't remember whether I sent that off to Goodwill with a bunch of other stuff or not. But I've read through that book several times, and I really enjoy it.
What about you, Frankie?
When it comes to Batman, I don't think you can get any better than Arkham City, the video game. They just took, like, every Batman thing and put it in one really fun game. They made it so that, like, you really feel like you're Batman in it. That, you know, there's detective work, there's being stealthy, and, you know, there's hiding up in gargoyles. There's an entire, like, sandbox that is all of, it's not all of Gotham City, but it's Arkham City, which is like a closed off, poverty stricken section of the city that's just for encapsulating criminals. They've incorporated just about every Batman villain that you could ever think of. You can play as Catwoman, which is really, really cool. It's just and it's voiced by Kevin Conroy as Batman, who did Batman's voice in the animated series and many of the DC movies. He's like he is the voice of Batman, and Mark Hamill does the voice of Joker in the first two Arkham games. And then, of course, other than that, I mean, I would check out I love Under the Red Hood, which I talked about a little bit earlier. That's a Joker story, and they do a real departure of Joker's voice in that. It's by the guy who did Bender's voice in Futurama.
And what is it? It's a
show, I'm sorry. It's a DC animated movie. Straight to Blu-ray.
Okay.
And it's about the second Robin. You thought he was killed. He was killed by the Joker, beaten to death with a crowbar. And now he's his own vigilante, and Batman has to stop him. But Joker loves it because Joker is like, I created this like total unrest among the heroes, and there's one of those nice Joker moments where he's like, we're all gonna die tonight, and I love that. But they have one of my other favorite Joker moments, which is a Black Mask hires him to kill the Red Hood, and he asks for a glass of water, smashes the glass. Cuts everybody's throat in the room except for Black Mask, kills all of them in like a few fell, one or two fell swoops. And he says, all right, I'm going to need some guys, but not these guys because they're all dead. And then he just starts laughing his ass off. I would also recommend Batman Year One, which is also a DC animated movie, because Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad does the voice of Commissioner Gordon, and it's really great.
Oh. Sounds good.
So just watch Batman, man. You can't do any better than Batman. He's the fucking Dark Knight. He's like better than Jesus.
So how do you guys feel pretty good about having seen this? You may not want to follow up and do more, but yeah. How do you feel about having watched it?
I was grateful to watch it.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it.
All right. Well, I feel okay then. I'll watch the second series. Who needs you guys? So Tycho, we've been forgetting to pimp all of the ways that people can get a hold of us. So how do you feel about doing that? Well, okay. So if people like what we're doing here, Tycho, what should they do?
They should rate us and review us on iTunes.
Yes.
They can send us a tweet at Lone Holdout.
And those things are capitalized?
Yes. Although it doesn't matter, does it? Like
I don't know. Whatever.
Okay.
They'll know us if they find us.
You can leave a comment on the Facebook page, facebook.com/loneholdout. You can leave a comment on the Red Cow page, which is redcowentertainment.com/loneholdout. You can send us email.
At loneholdout at redcowentertainment.com.
Yep.
And there you have it. Or they can light up a signal in the sky that says LH. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think either of us would go answer that.
Yeah,
cool joke you got there, bro. All right, well, there you have it. Hey guys, don't cook naked.
Good night.
Hey, cats and kittens, this is Steamroll Sally back at you to steamroll over some more of this podcast. We got a few more Batman jokes for you. What does Batman's mother call him to dinner? Wait, I fucked that up. How does Batman's mother call him to dinner? And I already told the joke earlier.
I don't think we were recording.
Do you want me to do this in the Plinkett voice?
Always.
What's Batman's favorite part of the joke? Fucking punchline. When's Joker not plotting a murder? When he's riding his Harley. That's a sex joke of some kind.
Yes.
How many Caped Crusaders does it take to change a light bulb? None. They like the dark. What did Batman say to Robin before they got in the Batmobile? Get in the Batmobile, Robin. I'm not even paying attention to what the jokes are. I'm just so focused on the voice. I have a voice for you. What is Batman? I'm trying to do the fucking Christian Bale like gravel voice. What is Batman's favorite drink?
What?
Fruit punch. What the fuck does that even mean?
Punch. It's like he likes the punchline. He likes fruit punch. He likes punching things.
Oh, I can do Michael Caine as Alfred.
Okay.
When does Poison Ivy change her underpants? When they get soiled, Master Wayne.
Oh, God.
What's the difference between Batman and a unicorn?
What?
They're the size of a tangerine. That's what? Not the joke. You don't get the joke because you're a loser.
Okay.
Nothing. They're both fictional characters, you see. That's bullshit. Batman is a part of us. All right. Do you need more jokes?
No.
What does Batman put in his beverages?
Just ice.
I don't get the joke whatsoever.
Justice.
Oh, I was trying to connect it to like a Mr. Freeze thing, like just ice.
What does Batman put in his beverages? Just ice.
You're going for that, huh?
Is there another one you could do in that voice?
Why did Batman flush the toilet? Because it was his duty.
You've hit upon a magical combination, though, the poop joke with a funny voice.
With Arnold. They have a joke that's like a story.
Okay. What voice do you want to do it in?
Well, you seem to really like Arnold. So you want to try to do like Arnold throughout?
Oh, well, how long are we talking? Like a paragraph? Can you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you maintain it?
Yeah, I can try.
Okay.
Superman was feeling bored after a long break of crime fighting and wanted to go out and party. So he called. So we called Batman to ask if he wanted to go to a club and pick up some girls. Batman said Robin was ill and he had to look after him. A little disappointed, Superman called Spider-Man to see if he wanted to grab a couple bears. Spider-Man told him he had a date with Catwoman. As a last resort, Superman flew over to Wonder Woman's apartment to see if she was free. If she would freeze... As he landed on her balcony, he saw Wonder Woman naked on the bed with her legs open.
I think I've heard this
I don't
one.
Know where this is going.
I do.
Do you?
She's fucking the Invisible Man. I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there.
Okay. Superman thought to himself, I'm faster than a speeding bullet. I could be there, pump some iron, have sex, and out again before she knew what was happening. So Superman did his thing in a split second, you know, with the sex and the coming, and flies off happily. Meanwhile, on the bed...
This accent is going a little off the rails.
Meanwhile, on the bed, Wonder Woman said, did you hear anything?
And the Invisible Man says, no, but my ass sure hurts.
My ass hurts like hell.
Well, I didn't actually pay attention to the joke while I was reading it. Yeah. So the fact that you even knew that crazy line was coming to me... I'm coming. Have you ever seen Pumping Iron?
No.
It's a documentary about...
Does he
about-
say, I'm coming?
Yeah, he does. There's a documentary about Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was in his late 20s. He had won Mr. Universe a number of times.
Yeah.
And it was like him versus Lou Ferrigno in a battle to the
death.
Bodybuilding death. And there's this really, like, he had won, like, Mr. Universe, like, 9 times in a row or something. Mm-hmm. And they were interviewing him, and he's like, you know, I'm extremely happy to be me. You know, it's like, imagine it's like coming all the time, like with a pretty girl. You know, it's like when I'm in the gym, I'm coming. When I'm out there, you know, winning, I'm coming. It's like I'm coming. Can you imagine coming all the time? Very weird clip.
Wow.
Do yourself a favor. Google Arnold Schwarzenegger coming.
No, thank you.
Well,
is
YouTube
that
it then.
An actual result that comes up? Okay.
YouTube it then, because you're not in danger of porn if you do that.
Okay.
There's also Sean Connery with his open hand slap to women. You ever heard that one?
Yeah. Yes. Didn't you send me like an edited version where they just ended it with him slapping Barbara Walters? Is that who's doing the interview?
Barbara Walters is like, you know, I remember a few years ago you said that a woman should be slapped with an open hand.
And he was like, you know, I still agree with my, I still agree with myself. It works best with an open hand. I'm like still doing Arnold. I can't like, get out of Arnold. I was doing a good Connery the other day.
Oh,
anyway,
Steamroll Sally. I've got
Steamroll Sally came in and steamrolled the fuck out of the ending.
It's like I'm Skyping and I'm podcasting and every day I'm coming.